People Leading People is a podcast about the stuff that pops up when you lead people at work. Join Brennan McEachran, CEO of Soapbox, and me, Jillian Gora, customer experience at Soapbox, as we interview the people leaders that inspire us most.
Today, we're speaking with Mark Roberge. Mark is a senior lecturer at Harvard Business School, where he teaches sales, marketing, and entrepreneurship. He's also managing director at Stage 2 Capital, a venture capital firm backed and run by go-to-market executives helping startups build world-class go-to-market capabilities. He's the author of the best-selling book, The Sales Acceleration Formula, using data, technology, and inbound selling to go from zero to 100 million. Prior to these roles, Mark served as SVP of Global Sales and Services at HubSpot, scaling revenue from zero to $100 million. Mark was ranked number 19 in Forbes' top 30 social sellers in the world. He's an MIT graduate and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, Forbes Magazine, Inc. Magazine, Boston Globe, TechCrunch, Harvard Business Review, and other major publications for his entrepreneurial ventures. Okay, welcome, Mark.
Hey, good to be
great,
here.
Great to have you.
Awesome to have you, Mark. And super excited. We had a few conversations and I figured, hey, we should probably record a podcast about your process and evolution of cadence, I would say, for your one-on-ones with sales reps as you were growing HubSpot, and same with team meetings. I thought it was really interesting how there was kind of a different element of coaching to it than what I had heard before, and very different than what I imagine your average VP of sales is doing. And a scaling tech company. So I heard you talk about that answer. We dug into it in more detail and I thought, hey, this is something that is useful outside of sales and just general managing teams. But I figured this would be a great place to kind of showcase it. Before we jump into that and before, and maybe to get your minds turning on that topic, if you could walk us through a bit of your own history of how you kind of got into the roles you were in and how you got maybe into this seat here.
I mean, the last decade has been a lot of serendipity, which is interesting for a type A analytical person who's always trying to have a 10-year plan. I've learned to get from that because all the great things that have happened in my life were unexpected.
The plan is to go with the flow.
I always tell my students, you know, just be open to the listening for answers at all times because the answers to your questions will appear when you're not asking, you know, that type of thing. It's deep. There you go. So I started, you know, I'm an engineer by training. I was a mechanical engineer undergrad. The first couple of years of my career, I was writing code. I studied at MIT, which is extremely, you know, a quant oriented program. And so that really was the foundation of my education and early career was very, very data driven. And I fell in love with entrepreneurship at a young, you know, at early in my career, probably 23, 24, and never looked back. Did a number of startups. The most recent was HubSpot, where I met the, you know, Dharmesh and Brian, the two co-founders at MIT. And, you know, four or five of us banded together and tried to make this vision around inbound marketing happen. So my role in that was the sales leader. And, you know, given my background, I took a very data-driven approach to it and was just lucky that macro things were happening in the world of sales and just business in general. We were on the brink of this big data movement where, you know, we were moving from how do I get the data to what do I do with all this data? Mm-hmm. And so my mindset was, I was just leaning into it because I was stressed. I wanted to hit goal. And when a data geek is stressed, he leans into the data. And it just so happens that, you know, I was able to, you know, innovate some sales management and leadership principles that a lot of people were inspired by and wanted to apply to their businesses. So that's, I think, some of the cornerstone or foundation for some of the topics we'll talk about today. So I rode the HubSpot wave for 10 years. It was a very stressful, high learning, but exciting experience. We took the company public. I left about a year later, and joined the faculty at Harvard Business School to teach some of these principles in sales, marketing, entrepreneurship. And then I still have a lot of fun in the entrepreneur ecosystem. I mentor, advise, invest in 24 companies a year. So, you know, including, you know, Soapbox, I spent a lot of time with the team. So it's just really fun to at this point, just trying to help, you know, the next generation of entrepreneurs achieve their goals, largely through the revenue side. So that's me.
Awesome. Amazing. Students, both of the startup world and at Harvard. It's probably interesting differences between the two, but I'm imagining a lot of your students kind of catch the bug and go off and do their own thing as well.
For
so
sure.
Since you're helping us with some things at Soapbox, does that mean I'm kind of going to Harvard?
So kind of, yeah, basically.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
I'll send you, Jill, I'll send you a diploma.
Sweet. Okay.
Can you? That'd be great.
I definitely will be fired if I do that.
I'll tell anyone. I'll just step away. You know.
Okay, but I did want to jump into some management advice. And I think this can be, you know, probably used at all different scales, from, you know, that scrappy 10-person startup all the way up to you know, hundreds and hundreds of employees. The question that originally brought it up when we were at Sasser was, how do you run your one-on-ones with SDRs? And I thought your answer of how you layered in performance and coaching and self-guided learning was really interesting. Can you share, you know, more about how you set that up, came up with that, yeah, what the process is like?
Yeah, this one's going to take just a couple minutes here, because there's some foundational steps, and then I think that'll be cool. It's been applied and explored beyond sales, which I think we want to make sure that the audience here can understand as we go, but I'll let you dive into that. So yeah, as I reflected on even just like the sales manager role, and not even just with SDRs, but even just general salespeople, and I looked at sales managers and what they did from company to company, I was concerned. I did feel that most of the job they did was essentially doing the job for the reps, like literally going to the meetings, running the meetings, which was scary, because it really made the reps lazy and not confident, because the manager could usually do it better than them.
Yeah.
And that just was really detrimental to the scale of the business. And the other thing they did was they spent a lot of time putting together a forecast, which is like, you technology can do that today better than a human, honestly. And so I thought about what I want my sales managers to do and boil down the job to two things, which is hire and coach. They can hire and coach, develop their people. They're just going to be really successful. Mm-hmm. And I didn't feel like there was a lot of like coaching that was going on from the managers that I observed across the industry. And so that's really what I wanted to focus attention on, is just coaching. And what is good coaching? You know, good coaching is a customized diagnosis of where this particular person is struggling and how this person likes to learn. Versus like the managers that initially tried to do coaching, they would just see a lot of broken things with a salesperson and throw up on them for like an hour with all these things. And it was just, nothing worked, but because the person just didn't know what to do.
Overwhelmed.
Right. And so as I watched coaches evolve, what they got really good at was seeing all the things broken, but understand the one or two that would be most helpful and most impactful at this stage of the salesperson's development. Mm-hmm. And that's where data really helped with that diagnosis, to see sort of where in the funnel they were struggling relative to best performing reps. And at least gave us some guidance as to where to look further to properly diagnose this deficiency.
Right? And this is data that you already had. This was just, you know, pulled from the CRM. You're already looking at it. It was helping them with these forecasts that we're spending too much time on.
Yeah, in an inside environment, how many calls, how many connects, how many qualified conversations, how many discovery calls, how many demos, how many contracts, how many closes, right? Yeah. I mean, it's like just something like that basic. And an outside context is different. It's just like, you know, it's six stages of an opportunity. And that gives me great guidance as to like where this person the coaching could be most beneficial to their productivity, right? And so that really, like, you know, essentially I just, the way I held the large organization accountable to that is I met every single one of my sales leaders on the second day of every month and just went through, okay, let's go through each rep. What's their diagnosis? Mm-hmm. How will you coach them? And how will you measure the impact? Mm-hmm. Right. So, like, you know, with Brennan, he's struggling with sense of urgency development. I'm going to listen to two of his discovery calls this month. In fact, we already have those calls booked. And I'm gonna measure our success in growing by getting his close rate on opportunities from 18% to 25, which is in line with the mm-hmm. company average. Mm-hmm. Right. So just super tight, right? And I had that meeting on the second day of the month, so that on the first day of the month, all the managers were meeting with their reps, having that discussion.
Yeah.
Right. So those managers walked out, and we can talk about how that meeting's run, because mm-hmm. I think there's some important nuances to that.
Yeah.
But those managers essentially walk out, and the reps, with a very detailed and thoroughly developed coaching plan mm-hmm. that is scheduled in the calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I'd also be interested to know what goes into preparing for that meeting, and how, like, how much time a rep is spending, for example, mm-hmm. having to self-reflect, and mm-hmm. how are we identifying that one need or like, you know, because I could totally understand how a manager, especially a new manager, would kind of have that like, oh my gosh, here's like the 15 things that I think are going wrong and I don't know how to handle this and there's just too much going on. So I would be interested to kind of dive a little deeper into the methodical, like how do you nail that, get zero in on that need?
Yeah. The going back one day, what was that rep? What was their one-on-one like mm-hmm. at the start of the month?
Yeah. And that was really, I mean, actually, you know, preparation is nice to have for this discussion, but honestly, for both the rep and the manager, if they don't prepare at all for this one-on-one, it's still extremely productive.
Right.
So because, you know, it's not that hard to instrument the sales funnel data, so it's just coming out of an automated mm-hmm. CRM dashboard report. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like, it's not that hard to make this happen. So literally, we can walk in completely underprepared. So Joe, you and I are doing our one-on-one. Mm-hmm. And if you're my manager, you might say to me, okay, Mark, let's not even look at the data first. Let's just reflect on your month qualitatively. Mm-hmm. How do you think you did? Mm-hmm. Right. And so, well, I came in at 125% of my goal. You know, I think I made a lot of improvements on my activity volume. I felt better with those. And I think, like, as I reflect on the deals that I lost, I do think that I'm struggling to get the decision maker effectively.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So great. That's a good qualitative observation. Mm-hmm. I agree with those observations. Now let's start looking at the data.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So here is how many calls you made for the month relative to the rest of the team.
Yeah.
And you're actually in the top 20%. So that's impressive. How do you think you're getting there relative to your peers? And so this is just teaching the rep to self-reflect on their behaviors. And it's also an opportunity for the manager to learn, how do people get into the top tier for that activity? What are some of the things they're doing?
How do I create more of this over with
others? Yeah, how will I coach people who are struggling based on my top performers, right? Because like, I often tell my managers, I tell them, many managers try to build a team that is a clone of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think, problematic in almost any function. Like, I don't have sellers that are successful that are all the same. They don't succeed in the same way.
Yeah.
They have their own individual strengths. And as a manager, you've got to nurture that.
Mm-hmm.
And I often draw an analogy to like sports. If you're a professional NBA basketball coach, many of them played before. Many of them played the game. And say, for example, one of them was a point guard, right? How can they possibly coach a center
if
they were a point guard? But they do. And the way that they do is because they've seen amazing centers in their career.
Mm-hmm.
They've coached amazing centers.
Mm-hmm.
And they can compare that center to that center.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so that's the opportunity we have as managers now, is to start developing, pattern recognition of what type of style this rep will succeed most with, even though it's not my style when I was a rep,
mm-hmm.
and coach them to it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right? So this allows us to do it. So then we move on to the next number. Okay. This is the conversion rate from opportunity to demo.
Yeah.
Wow. You're in the bottom 20% here.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that is?
Mm-hmm.
And so the rep might say, well, I think this is where we're getting back to, like, I'm not getting the decision maker on the call. Okay, great. Like, my observation is, I think I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so we keep going through all the charts, and then the manager stops. Jill will say to me, okay, Mark, well, based on your qualitative assessment and your reflection on the numbers, what's the one area you want to work on together this month? And I might say, okay, you know, I want to work on getting that decision maker on the phone. Mm-hmm. Great. I agree with you. I think that's probably the highest, you know, potential area we can work on. How do you want my help on that? Okay. And so I might say, well, why don't we listen to a couple of those discovery calls and listen to attempts I'm making at getting to power, like getting the decision maker on the call. Mm-hmm. And why don't you help me understand where I'm falling short? Right. And so the manager's like, oh, that's great. Jill will say, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. Let's book those calls right now. Okay. So it's the first day of the month. We're both free on the 7th at 3 and we're both free on the 18th at 9 a.m. Let's book those right now. You come to those meetings with those recordings so we can diagnose them. And God forbid you book an important sales call during that conflicts. Don't worry, just reschedule the meeting, but reschedule it. Don't cancel it.
Yeah.
Right. So now I walk out of the first day of the month with just such a strategically formulated coaching model that's proactively scheduled in my calendar. And I get off the typical hamster wheel that all sales leaders are on, which is like, I'm just chasing the quarterly number, closing business for my reps, and I'm never getting to coaching and development. Mm-hmm. And this makes sure that I'm being proactive and purposeful in the development of my team.
And helping them hit the numbers versus running around, exactly, closing things.
Exactly.
I think you snuck in a lot of really interesting things there that I just want to point out, because first couple times I heard this, I was like, oh man, there's so many nuggets of wisdom. I don't know if you iterated towards or if you just found or happened upon, but as you're going through, you're recognizing the reps for where they are doing good and where they are experts. So you're building them up, right? I think, you know, it's not uncommon for people to jump in as a sales manager, as a manager in general, and be the expert, right? And kind of overstep their bounds and almost push any of their direct reports down. But I thought that was really interesting as you go through. Hey, how are you doing that? This is really cool. You're doing a really great job. That's awesome. Teach me. Show me how so I can replicate that. Mm. And then I think the nugget of wisdom in this whole thing around coaching is really creating an environment for them to invite it, right? You're walking through, you're agreeing with them, you're asking them where they want the coaching, where they want the feedback. You're letting them invite you to nitpick. Because I think if you're, you know, going through and saying, hey, you're really bad at this one area, you're really bad at this one area all month, because you've come up with, hey, this is my strategic, you know, goal for this rep this month, is to talk about, you know, activities or demo conversions. They're going to be like, man, my manager is like on my ass this month. Like they're just like nonstop trying to go into every call I'm making and picking on my conversion rates. But it's a really interesting way to say, almost inviting them to lead the discussion, inviting them to lead the coaching. I think that's kind of like one of the keys there that unlocks their ability to be receptive to that feedback.
But I mean, what if you get into a situation where that person doesn't want to participate, or maybe that they don't want to, but they're just, maybe they did need time to prepare and they feel like they're being put on the spot, or they're not quite as self-reflective and they don't really know why they're in the position they're in. I mean, how as a manager can you navigate that situation without coming across as overbearing or micromanaging? Mm-hmm. And, you know, at a certain point, you kind of have to go to the numbers and be like, dude, like, this is where you're sitting, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. No, it's a great question, Jill. It's kind of where I was going to comment on, you know, Brennan's observation. Mm-hmm. You know, for us, and this isn't for everybody, but I do find that a lot of companies benefit from this. The number one metric or characteristic that we interviewed our new hires on was coachability. Mm-hmm. And so that by itself addresses a lot of your concern, is through the interview process, we were continually coaching people. We were continually diagnosing their deficiencies and coaching them and observing their response. Mm-hmm. So just by, you know, that selection process, we significantly mitigated the risk that they were going to be, you know, not receptive to it.
Totally.
Right. So that's not for everybody, but, mm-hmm. but we did. And then now, of course, like, yes, people join and some people are just not receptive to it. Mm-hmm. And the luxury we have in sales, which also can be replicated in other function, is this has to be, it's not like we're running the soft, like do whatever you want, like, you know, you know, nursery school type culture. Mm-hmm. We were running the major leagues where it was extremely difficult to stay there. And to stay there, you had to be performing at an extremely high level. And part of that ingredient was like, you know, in sales, it's extremely common to have a performance plan and a termination plan, mm-hmm. right? I mean, it's just the reality. Like, and we told people what it was on the first day of the job. It wasn't the only thing we told them. We told them a bunch of things.
Here's how you're going to get fired.
Yeah, exactly. They didn't even blink an eye. It's like, yeah, of course. Thank you for sales. That's sales. I get it. If I'm below 80% of my number for two quarters in a row, I'm on a plan. And if I don't get to 80% the next one, I'm fired. I get that. No one was concerned about it. And it wasn't subjective. It was factual. So the fact that existed, that's your kind of backstop, right? That like, that's the consequence.
Yeah.
If I come in with a rep and they're like, yeah, I don't really want to waste time on coaching. My response honestly is fine. Mm-hmm. Like right. Just, I'll check in with you next month. And usually within 7 days, they're at my desk. Because like, they're struggling. Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So that's, you know, that's the best way to get, first off, don't hire non-coachable people. At least we didn't, if you want to run this environment.
Yeah.
Second off, if they somehow end up not coachable, then don't coach them. And then you've got your backstop and they'll sink or swim.
Yeah. Setting those clear expectations.
So it was interesting. You said at the start, your managers did hiring and they did coaching. And the firing was more of a automated, here's the plan. You kind of automatically trigger yourselves into these different states. And that's just how it happens. There's no subjectivity to it. Obviously your manager helps you stay out of that. That's their goal. Yes.
That's so critical because like every other firing context that I've seen where it was just, if there's any subjectivity, it becomes mm-hmm. political. It becomes mm-hmm. political. Yeah. It's interpreted by both the person that's terminated as well as most of the organization that, you know, Mark just didn't like Brennan and that's why he got fired. If you establish from the beginning, these are the roles, then it's much more just like, you know, if you know, hey, Brennan, you know what's going on. Like, this is the game. I will stay night and weekend to help you win this game. It's up mm-hmm. to you. Mm-hmm. And then when you lose, it's like, it's on you, right? And sometimes losing isn't a bad thing. I've had tons of reps who were number one at one place, came in, didn't succeed.
Yeah.
And I had tons of reps that we fired that went off and became great reps.
Yeah.
It's just because like the context of your unique abilities with the sales context is critical. And so we just have to find the right match. And it's better for everyone if you were to move on, right? So,
yeah. Well, I was just going to say, because earlier you'd mentioned that this does scale to kind of other functions as well. Mm-hmm. It's not something that is just for sales managers.
Yes.
I mean, sales is very data driven and not.
That's what I was going to say, that it's like, well, in sales, it is easy to kind of set those expectations right out the gate. Like, listen, this is our average. Like, we have all this data available to us. We know our rates. Like, this is something that you can lay out. If you're starting in, let's say, a smaller company in like a product role, or maybe in like a customer success role, or I don't know, like there's all these different areas of smaller startup businesses that things are a little cloudy and they're a little hazy and you're kind of defining success as you go and sort of changing up what the targets are sometimes on a week by week, month by month basis. Mm-hmm. How, like, what advice do you have for managers in terms of setting those expectations at the outset with people?
I mean, that can be more challenging both for the smaller scale and for these other disciplines. Mm-hmm. First off, there are things that we can do to offset the challenges. For example, with customer success people, that is more quantifiable than we think. You know, there's, of course, like the retention of your customers and the upsell of your customers are highly quantifiable numbers. Many organizations these days are trying to find leading indicators of success that they can hold their customer success people accountable, such as like the frequency of product usage and the breadth of product usage. Mm-hmm. These are all quantifiable numbers that we can create. Mm-hmm. Similar opportunities exist for customer support with, say, MPS of your calls, with marketers in terms of like pipeline generation from your campaigns, even with product and engineers in terms of the usage metrics for the features that you own, mm-hmm. right? Like these are all quantifiable things. So we can search for ways to quantify. On the smaller scale, you know, even these expectations, like can be quantified. You know, the OKR model, as an example, is a very popular marketing management style. Mm-hmm. The objective key result, which was created at Intel and popularized at Google. And, you know, that allows you, even in a startup context of a team of seven people, to establish a, you know, quantifiable metric, sort of an objective that that you are going after, and a quantified key result that it would measures, average versus good versus great performance. Mm-hmm. And yes, I can't, it's more difficult for me to say, like, listen, you're going to be fired if you don't hit like 40% of your OKRs. That's more difficult, but at least it's something that's there.
It goes like green, yellow, or red.
Yeah. Yes. Every 6 weeks we've been setting OKR, and while the rest of the team is hitting, 60 to 70%, you're hitting 20. Like, at least it's something I can point to.
Yes.
To help mitigate that risk. Exactly.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Well, we're getting to the end of our time here. So before we let you go, we'd love to ask a secret question. Mm-hmm. So if you could pick a number between 1 and 3, and then I'm going to ask you a question and you have to answer.
All right, cut in half. Let's go 2. What is it?
All right. Number 2. What's the one piece of advice you would give to yourself 5 years ago?
5 years ago. Exactly 5. Well, I would say, continue to learn from some of your observations in the past and not be too worried or calculated in planning the future. But instead just listen to the opportunities that are coming to you and pick the ones that are aligned with, your mission. Because I think at the time I was really worried about a post HubSpot world and whether I'd become outdated or just like lose my, relevance and my passion for entrepreneurship. And, it's just, that wasn't a worry at all. A lot of stuff came my way, and now it's just, it's really just trying to engage with the stuff that is most aligned with my personal mission, which is to help entrepreneurship from the realm of revenue generation to be a better discipline. Mm-hmm. So that was it. And I think that happens for a lot of people, even the 22-year-olds with no career, traction. As long as you work hard and keep listening, the stuff is going to happen for you. And so just don't worry as much.
Don't worry as much.
If only.
Maybe I'll tell myself every night.
Yes, so
I fall asleep. Don't worry. Yeah.
Exactly.
Don't worry. Awesome. Really appreciate you taking the time to jump on the podcast, share some of those nuggets with the listeners. We always try to give the final word to you. So whatever you want to share to them, whatever message you want to add, anything you want to promote, feel free to take it.
Yeah, thank you for that. So, a lot of these concepts are codified in my book, The Sales Acceleration Formula. But the reason I want to bring it up is 100% of the proceeds of that book are donated to a nonprofit called Build.org, which has an exceptional mission. It chooses the toughest high schools in every urban environment where the kids just weren't dealt the deck that we all were dealt. And it exposes them to entrepreneurship to maximize their chances of graduating from high school and getting to college. The graduation rate is 99% for the kids that get into it. And the matriculation in college is something around 85%, which is so above the averages for those high schools. So check out the book and thank you for the support on that for that reason. And check out build.org if there's a chapter in your region.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
People Leading People is produced by Soapbox and edited by Joel North. Soapbox helps managers lead better by giving them a place to have more productive one-on-ones, team meetings, and company-wide discussions. Go to soapboxhq.com to download our free app. If you like what you heard today, do us a favor and give us 5 stars in the reviews. And if you're really feeling the love, leave a comment with a secret question you'd like us to ask in an upcoming episode.